May we be reminded here now of our highest aspirations and inspired to bring our gifts of love and service to the altar of humanity. May we know that we are not isolated beings, but connected in mystery and miracle to the universe, to this community, and to each other. Let's sing. A time in the service where we light candles, if we wish, to mark prayers, hopes, dreams. So if you would like to light a candle, or if you just want to remain sitting, remembering why you're here, please do so now.
Humankind, are we not all brothers and sisters? Are we not the grandchildren of the great mystery? Do we not all want to love and be loved, to work and to play, to sing and dance together? But we live with fear. Fear that is hate, fear that is mistrust, envy, greed, vanity. Fear that is ambition, competition, aggression. Fear that is loneliness, anger, bitterness, cruelty. And yet, fear is only twisted love. Love turned back on itself. Love that was denied. Love that was rejected. And love. Love is life, creation, seed, and leaf, and blossom, and fruit, and seed. Love is growth, and search, and reach, and touch, and dance. Love is life believing in itself. And life. Life is the sacred mystery singing to itself, dancing to its drum, telling stories, improvising, playing. And we are all that spirit. Our stories tell but one cosmic story, that we are love indeed. That perfect love in me seeks the love in you. And if our eyes could ever meet without fear, we would recognize each other and rejoice. For love is life believing in itself. So be it.
Congratulations on your Green Sanctuary certification. Kathy told you about this Green Sanctuary program and the Seventh Principle Project, which is an affiliated organization of the UUA, the Unitarian Universalist Association. The Seventh Principle Project is dedicated to helping UUs walk the talk of the association's seventh principle, the one that calls on us to, quote, respect the interdependent web of all existence of which we are a part. Now, this phrasing's somewhat belabored. I like the way it is expressed for the kids. We care for Earth's lifeboat. Now that arouses some vivid imagery, like we are all in some great Noah's Ark, drifting around the vast universe together. It presses the point that we are all completely dependent on our little blue-green vessel. That is the truth of our existential nature, that we dwell on the surface of this amazing biosphere. It is strong and steady, with an amazing capacity to recycle its own materials, its natural materials, and to renew itself. Just like when we cut ourselves, we can count on healing. It's just a part of the way we are, our being. The variety of life forms and the adaptability of them to their environments, it's not just Darwin's evolutionary idea, it is a profound source of human joy and awe.
isn't it? One of my favorite Bible lines is from the Gospel of Mark. Jesus is teaching about the realm of God, the kingdom of God, or the source of all creation. He said, "The realm of God is as if someone would scatter seed on the ground and would sleep and rise night and day, and the seed would sprout and grow. He does not know how. The earth produces of itself." I love the admission of the limit to human understanding and agency. We do not know how life comes into being, though fantastic progress has been made in understanding the mechanics of DNA and the genome project, but we still do not understand why. When we ask these basic questions, we have to confront the limits of our human condition and the mystery which is at the center of earthly existence. Whether you believe in creation or evolution, it is impossible to avoid mystery. In the face of the unknowable, we more easily turn to a deep sense of gratitude for life, thankful for the gift of it, conscious of the grace by which we live and are sustained in this world. Yet, we hear it in the news daily, and I'm going to do the litany now. It's kind of sad, but pollution is killing the life in the oceans. Scientists don't expect the coral reefs to last beyond 2050. Pollution from gas emissions is warming the atmosphere and our planet, melting the glaciers, melting the polar ice caps, causing violent weather changes, including hurricanes and flooding. Species are losing their habitats all over the world. They are becoming extinct, and this upsets ecosystems. The human population is pressing the supportive capacity of the Earth. It's all in the news. We've heard it. The nuclear waste from reactors is vulnerable to terrorist attacks, which could poison the whole regions, rendering them uninhabitable for tens of thousands of years. Global free enterprise trumps human rights of workers. Global free enterprise and corporate interests are given access to national markets and the rights to profitable business enterprise, and that trumps the rights of workers to a basic living wage, growing the gap between the richest and the poorest in every nation and every part of the world. Scientists can measure how and make projections on the rates at which humanity is destroying this biosphere. They have been calling out warnings for decades. Environmentalists have joined in the chorus to remind us that there is nowhere else to go. We know it, even if we often deny it or simply ignore it. There is no way to bail out, and if we want to live, we are stuck here together on Earth. The 19th century's most influential theologian, Friedrich Schleiermacher, had a definition of religion which aptly develops this lifeboat imagery. He said religion was about having, quote, the consciousness of being absolutely dependent, end quote. It is the kind of uncomfortable consciousness that would come quite easily if you were indeed cast adrift in a lifeboat on the ocean. Your ship sunk, the horizon wide, no land in sight. That'd be kind of a sickening feeling, wouldn't it? You can see it yourself, I'm sure, trying not to panic, trying to think clearly, taking stock of the situation, the available resources, utilizing them rationally, making plans, taking steps to increase your chances of survival, and doing it all because of an indwelling hope that you will be rescued. You will be saved. It is much more difficult to imagine the earth as a lifeboat. But this morning I want to try to do that so we can get to a more religious perspective of our home planet, a religious perspective which includes not only a sickening, panicky feeling of total dependence on what might well be a sinking ship, but one that also includes clear thinking, taking stock, utilizing resources rationally, and making plans to take steps which will increase our chances of survival, and all because of this indwelling hope in a future for our children. We must claim this hope, and we must express it in the way we live, whether we are optimistic about environmental issues or not. So, happy Earth Day. It's kind of like turning the birthdays of middle age. Oh, happy 43rd birthday. Ah, happy 56th birthday. Happy 66th. Well, they're birthdays anyway. They're to mark time. And I think that's what Earth Day is as well. Earth Day is another one of those more recent holidays or remembrance days, and you may not know too much about it. It always falls on April 22nd. It was founded by a U.S. Senator, Gaylord Nelson, in 1970, after almost a decade of effort. He was also a governor of Wisconsin, and he wanted to somehow bring the issues of pollution and environmental degradation into the field of national politics. He envisioned a special annual day dedicated to education and agitation for environmental causes in the style of the teach-ins which occurred on college campuses to protest the Vietnam War. The first Earth Day involved some 20 million Americans across the nation. He hit a button. 20 years later, some 200 million people were observing Earth Day in 141 countries. And it is the most celebrated environmental event worldwide. And as our world becomes more endangered, more people join in. In 2004, 500 million in 180 countries. The awareness-raising effect of Earth Day led to important legislation being passed in the U.S., including the Environmental Protection Act, the Clean Air Act, the Clean Water Act, and the Safe Drinking Water Act. It helped establish the idea that we need as a nation to protect the resources upon which we depend. Now the problems of environmental damage transcend national borders, and the whole world needs to act together to deal effectively with our lifeboat. The first UN Earth Summit in Rio de Janeiro on climate change and species extinction called together heads of state to forge this global approach. The Kyoto Protocol to limit carbon dioxide emissions is an example of such international cooperation for the sake of the Earth's health. Rejecting the Kyoto Protocol was one of the first signs of President Bush's unwillingness to put the well-being of the biosphere ahead of the interests of the United States. He said limiting emissions would limit the economic growth of the nation, and that was that. But is economic growth so vitally important? Let's pick up a few of Marcia's points. First, what is the nature of wealth? What is the true nature of wealth? A lot of people are asking themselves this question. In fact, it is a whole societal subculture asking. In Europe, in North America, in the UK, people all over the industrialized West, in fact, are taking this question to heart. What truly enriches my life? The answer they give has been simplicity, or the simplicity movement. This movement is made up of people like you and me who have disposable income which they are free to spend. They have moved beyond supplying their basic needs. Simplifying is a matter of consciously questioning our assumptions about how to spend that income. Do we want more stuff? More and more stuff? Do we derive satisfaction from our consumption? What is enough? What is the personal cost of working a 60-hour week? Do we need to work so long and hard for the endless gadgets, toys, fashions, and trends? The objective of simplifying is not to just stop consuming, but to consume only that which brings you enjoyment and satisfaction. For many people, it is taking a step off the bandwagon where the basic assumption is that more is better. More income, more property, more stuff. The people who choose to simplify have decided that more time to enjoy family and friends leads to much greater satisfaction than more income. Enough is not a concept we relate to all that well, I don't think. But in a world of limited resources, it is an idea whose time has come. North American culture is much more attuned to the notion that enough is not really enough. We don't want just enough, we want more than enough. Didn't Jackie Kennedy say you could never be rich enough or thin enough? I started to notice how the understanding of enough worked when I was in India. We had some Muslim neighbors, and when they were over and I was offering them refreshments, I noticed that when I would offer them more, they would not say, no, thank you. They would say, enough. I thought about this. I was sort of peeved at not being addressed with the no, thank you. And I discovered that there's a subtle difference of perspective behind the manners. It is something beyond a sense of individual entitlement in the determination of enough. There is a consideration of the possibility of sharing with others, I think, in it. If this is enough for me, then I am satisfied. If there is more to be had, let it be for the satisfaction of others. I think we need to learn what may be some new and strange skills with regards to discerning enough. We need to become aware of the levels and degrees of our own satisfaction. It's not about deprivation. To identify what in our lives truly has the capacity to satisfy us and how to measure our satisfaction, it will be an individual endeavor. It's all with the idea of discerning what is enough. Think of eating dinner for a very down-to-earth example. How many of us keep our awareness on exactly when we feel our appetite is satisfied when we're eating a meal? And how many of us allow that sufficiency to end our meal? What a concept. Now you may be thinking, hey, if I just paid for this buffet, I'm going to eat all I can eat. But we all know how that works out. Gorging, uncomfortably stuffed, have to have a nap, incapacitation, years of it, bulge. It's not good for our health. If we eat too much at that buffet, it does not deprive anyone else from eating, we think. But as a principle applied to all aspects of our lifestyle, consider recognizing sufficiency can guide us to some sense of what is our fair share. Marcia talked about how her grandparents provided for themselves by growing their own food and sewing their own clothes, amongst many other jobs. Not only did they meet their basic needs, but in the process of doing so, they became wealthy in their sense of their own capacity to produce and rely on themselves. They exercised their ingenuity and developed their skills. They depended on the land and each other. That seems to describe a lifestyle much richer in the potential for finding satisfaction and relationship than the familiar pattern of our lives with the commuting, working at a job for 8 or 10 hours a day, going shopping and keeping up with the bills. Granted, our lifestyle is less physically demanding and more comfortable, but is ease a true standard by which to judge the quality of our lives? I think our lives are enriched with realness in relationships and in personal challenges. William Ellery Channing, father of American Unitarianism, wrote these words, which speak well to these issues of what adds to our quality of life. To live content with small means, to seek elegance rather than luxury, and refinement rather than fashion, to be worthy, not respectable, wealthy, not rich, to study hard, think quietly, talk gently, act frankly, to listen to stars and birds, babes and sages with open heart, to bear all cheerfully, do all bravely, await occasions, hurry never. In a word, to let the spiritual, unbidden and unconscious, grow up through the commons. This is to be my symphony. This brings us back to the common, our world, Earth, a beautiful finite biosphere. Marcia wondered what we would be willing to give up in order to have equity in the world, so that everyone could hope to have their basic needs met. She asked what we in the first world would be willing to give up. The U.S. uses 25% of the world's fuel and is the least willing as a nation to give up economic growth for the sake of Earth's continued health. Donald Rumsfeld said that his mission in the war against terror was to persuade the world that Americans must be allowed to continue their way of life. But will the world be persuaded to live with greater hardship and scarcity for this land of plenty? I guess that's one of the reasons why this nation is spending more than 20% of its wealth on its military might. But might does not make right, and we know that it is immoral to continue in the lifestyle of overconsumption and waste. There is a world beyond America. Let us be very proud of the Green Sanctuary certification of this church. May this be the beginning of a continuing trend among us to seek out ways of life that are both enriching and sustainable. It is true that the environmentalism of our day is apocalyptic, and there is not too much in the news to feed our optimism that things will get much better very soon. However, please remember that there is a difference between optimism and hope. Hope is an active, determined conviction that is rooted in the spirit, chosen by the heart, and guided by the mind. Journalist Mark Hertzgard reminds us that hope has triumphed numerous times in recent human history. Think of the falls of apartheid and of the Soviet Empire. And it is hope which is indispensable to humanity's chances of creating an environmentally sustainable future. So, in conclusion, I exhort you to claim hope, to cleave to it every day. Try to develop your sense of what really gives you satisfaction in your lifestyle, and try to discern how much is enough for you. Go on with your recycling if you do it, and if you don't, start. And adopt a new green practice at regular intervals. Make that a commitment. If you need some guidance, check out the Earth's Ten Commandments in your order of service. Maybe that'll help you. Support the work for a sustainable future and teach your children to worship our mother, Earth. She is beautiful, precious, fragile, mysterious in her ways, in her origin, and in her destiny. Amen.